Welcome to the No Sports Report, a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. My name is Jensen Karp, and I'm a sports fan. How do I know this? Because today I visited one of those fantasy betting sites and contemplated betting on Moscow Liga Pro before I even knew what it was. It's table tennis, by the way, in Russia. And yes, they're actively the propositions getting the most action site-wide. Because the other option is darts. Guys, if I end up betting on darts, kidnap me and take me to Gamblers Anonymous. Promise me. Okay, thanks. I knew I could count on you. But for now, I'm talking to athletes and sports industry professionals about what they're doing in quarantine, hoping to figure out if they miss competing as much as I miss watching it. This is the No Sports Report. Adam Ottavino is as New York as buying a heat lamp street pretzel. Born and raised in Brooklyn, his great-grandfather founded a stone and granite company in the city that helped build landmarks like the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the monument at Babe Ruth's gravesite, and the base of the Statue of Liberty. And not shockingly, alongside this storied past with the city that never sleeps is a diehard fandom of the New York Yankees. Sure, when he was drafted in 2006 by the St. Louis Cardinals, his Major League Baseball dream came true. And when he was traded to the Colorado Rockies and clocked 37 scoreless appearances in 31 innings, a franchise record, it was obvious he was becoming a bona fide bullpen superstar. But there was always that real fantasy in the back of his mind, the goal of becoming a New York Yankee. And in 2019, when he became a free agent, it all happened, and now he wears pinstripes. The hometown boy returned and put together an extremely effective first season, but continues to fight through some postseason roadblocks that threw him right into the firestorm known as the New York sports media. And so while he should be participating in another year of achieving his childhood dream, he's now stationed at home with his wife and two kids waiting for the call to get back to work. We chat about his DIY mentality, hanging out with Garrett Cole during lockdown, and finding safety from obsessive thoughts. We get into this and more with Adam Ottavino, the New York Yankees number zero, on this No Sports Report.
Call from
Adam Ottavino.
To accept, press 1. Press.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Hey, going good. Thanks for having me.
I know you are extremely New York through and through, so I think I know this answer, but I have to ask everyone, where have you been quarantined and with who?
We live north of the city, New York City. I've just been with my wife and my two daughters.
And how old are your daughters?
4.5 and 1.5.
Ooh, that's quite an attack.
Yeah, we're in the trenches, but we love each other and they're cute, so it's okay.
I know. If they weren't cute, it would be torturous.
Yeah.
What have you done for fun to keep them entertained? That is an age that has to be watched at all times. What are you doing to make the time pass?
So for fun, you know, we have a yard and we chase them around out there, put them on the swings. We inflated a bounce house in the basement. So they can jump around down there and I play music real loud. We go on family walks. You know, we watch a lot of movies and read a lot of books, that sort of thing. But, you know, that's about it. They haven't seen anybody in a really long time, just through Zoom and things of that nature.
Yeah, it's like it's a sci-fi movie at times. At 1.5 and 4, though, that is a very repetitive movie age. Are you at least getting them to not watch Frozen over and over again?
Yeah, we moved on from Frozen 2 a while back, but it's true what you say. I mean, usually whatever they're into, it gets played 3 times a day for about a week until it switches.
Right.
So right now we're currently on a mixture of Inside Out, Ugly Dolls, and now my older one's into this like teenage musical zombies movie.
Sure.
So we're into that now.
Well, there's worse things than Inside Out. I'm into that. I'd watch that a couple times a day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a good one. There's been some painful ones along the way, but we're doing all right now.
Good. Do you have to homeschool the four-year-old? Is there even a curriculum to follow?
So her nursery school does Zooms Monday through Friday. It's just like half an hour, though. And then she has some extracurriculars that she's able to do through the internet as well. Like she does her ballet and her chess and guitar. But that's it. The little one's got one little learning thing that she does once a week for a half hour. And other than that, we just kind of read to her and try to do, you know, colors and letters and all that good stuff.
Well, chess and ballet, I was like, at that age, I was like picking my nose in Little League. Like those were my two hobbies. You're a very smart kid.
Yeah, we really threw our oldest into everything. We had an apartment in the city up until recently. And so we were there most of the time, the last year or two. And you know, she was running between a lot of extracurriculars. She had two ballets a week, and that's her favorite. And then she was doing guitar, chess, also like extra learning class, gymnastics, just a lot of different stuff because we wanted to keep her busy and stimulated as much as we could.
Yeah, true New York Renaissance woman. What's been the most surprising part for you being with your family 24/7 when you've mostly been on the road at months on end, but this has been probably a new thing for you?
You know, it's kind of similar to the off season for me. We carve out the time of the day that I work out and do my training and all that. But, you know, the big difference right now is that we're stationary. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say anything is too surprising. I mean, it's kind of what I expected it, but we're doing well. I mean, we haven't had too many horrible days. You know, it's mundane, but I think for the most part, we're doing well and we still like each other. So that's good.
That's ideal. You are no stranger. And this might be one of the reasons that you don't feel it's too different is that you know the do-it-yourself mentality that a lot of athletes and just normies have had to adapt during the pandemic. In the past, you rented out a storefront in Harlem to get your training in. Can you tell people about what this pitching layer that you created in the past? You had your own like bat cave for athletics. Can you tell us what that was like?
Yeah, you know, in the past, I had trained with a group and I was out on Long Island and it just became, you know, when my throwing partner moved away to Tennessee and it just became tough for me to really budget the time well and not feel like I was rushing. So, you know, we were able to get our own space in Harlem and I just kind of put everything I needed there. And I was able to train, you know, morning or evening, pretty much whenever it made sense that day and kind of get away from everybody and rebuild myself on my own and just kind of, you know, take it day by day. But it was really nice to have that private space to kind of do what I needed to do and keep my mind in a good place. And it's paying off now because all that equipment from that place, which is gone now, I have here.
Yeah.
So I've been able to do stuff in my basement and outside. And, you know, there's some stuff that I thought I would never use again because I had been training at Yankee Stadium this offseason, but that's off limits. So here I am using that stuff again. So it's kind of nice.
So what was the size? Was it like a Best Buy size or something, the storefront? Well, I mean, I'm imagining like a bodega, and that's a crazy thing to think.
It was 80 feet long, 25 feet wide. Very much where a bodega would go.
Wow.
The previous tenant in the space was a 9 West shoe store. It was right outside a bus stop. Subway's on the corner. It's on a very trafficked block. It was on St. Nicholas between 124th and 125th in Harlem. So a block away from the Apollo. So it's exactly what you would expect. Luckily, the ceilings were about 12 feet. So I could do throwing out to the 80 feet without any problem. And you know, we turfed half of it and I put a net down at the end, like a screen so I could throw into the screen. And we just kind of figured it out as we went along. Like we dealt with some lighting issues and some other issues, but overall it was really awesome.
The cameras all set up. That's basically what you've brought out to your house now. So what is the current setup at home?
So my gym's in the basement. I have like all the workout equipment there. And then I have all my throwing stuff in the garage and I just pull it out and throw in my yard. I have a bullpen catcher for the Yankees that lives about a half hour away and he drives over and we throw, you know, in my yard and throw off the mound once a week. And I have my cameras and all that set up and, you know, we just try to make the most of it, trying to stay ready so that when we hopefully figure something out and get going here, then my buildup won't be too long. I can just kind of get right into it.
And you've involved others. The Yankees made a massive offseason move, picking up Ace Garrett Cole. And you've been lucky enough to be able to train with him a little during quarantine. How did that come together? I saw an Instagram pic that showed him at your place.
Yeah, we just throw bullpens together that one day a week. So we just try to align our throwing to match up for that day every week. And he throws most of the time with our manager because they both live up in Greenwich. So they throw together up there in Connecticut. And that's about 15 minutes from here. So on the day of the bullpens, we come down. I mean, I have the turf mound that I had from my gym, and that's kind of the difference maker of why I ended up hosting everything. But yeah, it's been great. I mean, it almost feels like a game day, bullpen day. You know, he comes rolling in and we challenge each other. We try to make each other a little better and work on our game together. And it's been nice to get to know him during this time.
Yeah. Did you know him before or was it just like a sort of set up date for you guys to work out never meeting and stuff?
Well, I knew him a little bit. And I knew him from like some Players Association meetings and competing against him. And we had some mutual friends. And then this year when he signed, you know, I was at the stadium during his press conference because I was training that day at the stadium. And right before spring training, he moved in Connecticut. So we trained together for about a week at the stadium before heading off to Tampa. So really, I just kind of been in the right place at the right time to get to know the guy. And
yeah.
And then when we got broken up from spring training, we talked and I told him, hey, you know, like I have a mound at my house and let's utilize that. So, you know, whatever you're comfortable with, we'll figure it out as we go, but let's not be strangers. And so we've kind of kept that up. And also, you know, his wife's with him and she's pregnant and she comes and just kind of hangs with my wife and they watch from a distance. And I think it's nice just to see some other people.
Yeah, it does seem we interviewed Zach Plesac and he had the same kind of relationship with Clevinger. Like it seems like some guys have paired off who live near each other or who can sort of bunk up and get some practice in rather than just, I guess, throwing against a wall or hitting into a net. So that's good.
Yeah. And also, you know, he's really smart. So, I mean, ultimately, we kind of vibe in that way because we're both into the same stuff with baseball. And so It's nice to be able to kind of feed off of each other and it's made for a good time. You know, it's nice to get to see one of the best up close like that.
And Aaron Boone stopped by. You said that he practices a lot with Cole. Are you in touch with your teammates pretty much straight through this pandemic?
Yeah, we have group chats going and we had one Zoom with the whole team. You know, like I said, I see the bullpen catcher. I've seen Aaron Boone. So chat a little bit. And, you know, I have friends, obviously, that I text all the time. So
yeah,
we're in touch. You know, most guys did go their separate ways. There's still a group in Tampa and we get checked in with the training staff almost every day. So I feel like we're as together as you could be considering we're all apart.
Yeah. Well, who's the funniest in the group chat? Who's the funniest Yankee? I have my money on Luke Voit.
You know, it depends on the type of humor. Like I think just the biggest overall ridiculous character is Tommy Canley is another reliever. He's just a insane bundle of energy, but you know, Brett Gardner's really funny.
All right.
He tells great stories. And so I really like to be around them, but we have a good group. I mean, a lot of funny guys.
There's not one dude just hitting the memes over and over in the group chat?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, a little bit here and there, but overall, not really.
Let's talk about the pressure of being a Yankee. It's certainly different than Colorado, because even during the coronavirus, when I was researching you, the media is like wildly concerned about how you're keeping warm and all your teammates. Like you get your own articles, like here's how Adam is keeping fit. Like that definitely wasn't happening in other markets for you. How do you deal with that difference in scrutiny?
Well, I think I had a good advantage just because I grew up a Yankee fan, so I kind of know what that side of it is. I was a diehard Yankee fan growing up, and I understand that they're watching everything that we do. And basically, the thing I always tell my teammates is you just have to understand the Yankee fan perspective. Like, all they really expect is an all-star at every position and for perfection with your performance. So, you know, the expectations are what they are, but I think a big key for me was I matured a lot during my time in Colorado and ultimately realized when I came over here that I needed to tune it all out and just kind of focus on my craft my own way and let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, I think it's an honor to be scrutinized as much as we are, and it's an honor to be a Yankee and wear the pinstripes. So I just try to enjoy my teammates and focus on the game that we have that night. And I think it worked pretty well for me last year.
Yeah, I mean, you have quite a background and a family tree of people. I mean, I think it was your grandfather who helped build New York City in general.
Yeah.
I wonder what it was like for the first time walking into that stadium as an actual member of the Yankees. I mean, that must have been a real pinch moment.
Yeah, the craziest moment for me was right after I signed a contract, I got called in to the stadium for like some headshots and some stuff that I had to do there. So I went in and when they told me that for the headshot, I needed to wear like the jersey and the hat. Mm-hmm. So they had me put on the hat and the jersey for the photograph. So I commented right away to the clubhouse manager like that this jersey felt heavy to me. I could kind of feel the weight of it, you know, like the weight of being a Yankee in that moment. And, you know, it definitely felt different than any other moment in my career because I wore Yankee stuff, obviously, growing up, but it was more like fashion.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's like, this is what I'm going to be wearing for work. So that was a moment where I felt that type of thing for real. And then, you know, I think I got a lot of the other feeling out of the way during spring training, getting used to being a Yankee and having these teammates and, you know, that media coverage and all that. And then by the time I got to the actual season, I felt pretty comfortable. Mm. And that was kind of a bonus, I thought.
And with a single-digit number.
Yeah, that was a whole other thing. I mean, I didn't know if that was going to happen or not. Funny that ended up going down.
Amazing. You had a tremendous below 2 ERA last season, ran into a bit of a snag in the postseason, and I know that you've changed up your delivery and improved your off-speed stuff. You had a very good spring before it was shut down. How antsy are you to go back out there and prove yourself in a new season to these Yankees fans?
You know, I'm not really thinking about it from that perspective. I just know that our team has a really good chance to do special things if we can get back on the field. Mm-hmm. We have a really good group coming back, so Yeah, I just want to go out there and do my thing and then get another opportunity, you know, in the postseason. So you got to get there first. I don't want to shortchange the process. You got to work really hard to get to that opportunity and then try to seize the moment.
Yeah, and as a middle reliever, your workload is always monitored to avoid overusage. Does a lightened season with less games, does that excite you at all, or does that kind of frighten you for what they normally watch you innings-wise?
It doesn't really scare me. I train the throw more than they end up having us pitch, and I feel like I've been pretty well conditioned the last few years. But I do think that if people think that you're going to throw maybe less because of the shorter season, I mean, it could be naive because they might use it as, okay, there's less games overall, so we can push you a little more often. And I think that's totally reasonable considering if we do play a half season, then each game would be double the value. So I'm just going to try to go for it. I think one thing as a relief pitcher, especially somebody who pitches towards the back end of the game, you kind of take pride in taking the ball and always being ready. So I think that's the mentality we'll take when we go in.
Would doubleheaders mess you up? Would that? I mean, I was trying to think about that.
No, I mean, you know, I've pitched in both ends of a doubleheader a few times in my career. It's fine. It's just like then you can't pitch the next day. So, you know, I think luckily for our team, we have so many good pitchers and we have some good young ones coming that we were able to help each other out and lighten each other's loads and get us where we need to be fresh for the playoffs. I thought they did a nice job with that last year with us. Nobody really got burned out too bad. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that would be the same plan unless, you know, obviously things change and situation's a little more dire, and then we'd have to put the foot down. But I feel good about our overall team.
Yeah, and you guys have a stacked bullpen. Really, only Chapman is locked in for a role. All you guys can come in any inning. I think like there seems to be a lot of versatility on the staff. Is that something that you've noticed, and that's something maybe the Yankees organization has went out of their way to not have? This is the setup. This is the one pitch guy. Is it on purpose by committee in that way?
I think that the team tried to just get as many elite arms as they could. And then I think once they were already had a good baseline of that, then maybe there was a little more like, okay, we're lacking a little bit of a specialty in one way or another. Like I know when I got signed, you know, one thing that was communicated to me was that most of their pitchers in the bullpen were actually better versus left-handed hitters, the right-handed hitters. Obviously I'm better versus right-handed hitters. So that was kind of where I was initially thought to fit in with this group. And I think the other thing that's awesome about our group of relief pitchers is that pretty much everybody on our team could be a closer anywhere else, most other places, but everybody's kind of put that to the side. You know, Britton was an all-star closer for several years with Baltimore, and for him to come and accept a different role, that just shows what kind of guy he is and what he really values. And that's kind of the way I felt.
That's great. More with the Yankees' Adam Ottavino after this. Right now, Feeding America is working tirelessly to ensure our most vulnerable populations, like students who are out of school, the elderly, individuals whose jobs are impacted, and low-income families, continue to have access to food and other needed resources during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Feeding America Food Bank Network is committed to serving communities and people facing hunger in America, and their greatest need is donations and support of local food banks. This podcast is committed to donating a portion of the proceeds from the show to Feeding America, and we hope that you can join us in this effort too. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org/COVID-19. Now, let's get back to Adam. You've been vocal about some problems in the past that you've had with racing thoughts. Now, this clearly spoke to me. I suffer from something called obsessive thoughts disorder that I've dealt with for, God, since I was 12 years old. I've taken medication to really feel somewhat cured about it. I read that you use a journal to help calm yourself, and that does a lot for you. Much of the world is getting to our level right now with everything going on. People used to look at us and go, how do you have reoccurring crazy thoughts? And now we all have to because we feel like the world is ending at times. Has the pandemic spiked these thoughts for you at all?
No, I actually think overall, all of the baseball mental training that I've and mental evolution that I've gone through over my career has helped me deal with this scenario. I mean, you know, we've become really good at paying attention to what's important right now and boiling things down and being in the moment and really training your brain like about what are the things that you want to think about, you know, really controlling that side of it. And I think that serves me well now, because if you focus on the stuff that does matter in the moment and stuff that you can have a piece of, then, you know, I think that's a little safer of a mental game. And I think it's tough right now because there's obviously you know, a big urge for us to get back to normalcy. But, you know, because I don't control it and I can draw back on my training for pitching, you know, I think it kind of plays into that.
Yeah, it's crazy because you say those things and say that you said them to me a couple of years ago, I would have been like, well, that's impossible for me. I really truly would have. I would have been like, he's BSing me. But, you know, you found journaling and I'm sure you found some other techniques as well. And I found, you know, breathing and meditation and medication, you know, in my case. But I truly, when you find your rhythm, it does actually just sort of cut a lot of those thoughts out. And finding that rhythm is extremely difficult. Like, did it take you a long time to find your coping methods?
Yeah, it was an evolution. I mean, a lot of people helped me. I talked to a lot of people about what they think about while they're performing and other times, you know, how do they control the mental side of the game? Because for me, I always felt like I was just getting to a point where I would kind of overwhelm myself. And that's the worst feeling for me, is the feeling of being overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So for me, just over time, I got a little better at understanding that my mental controlled my physical in the game. And like, if I was thinking certain thoughts during a game where I performed well, I wanted to keep trying that. That way, I felt like if I had a consistent mental approach, it would help my physical approach, you know, become more consistent. So it was hard, though. I mean, failure played a big role. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you have to be in your lowest moments where you really doubt everything to really put the onus on yourself to make a real actionable change. And that was kind of the case with me. Like, a lot of coaches would tell me something and maybe I didn't buy in until I failed so bad that I bought myself in, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, sure. Sure. It is. It's the mind, the brain is a very terrifying, beautiful thing. And that's amazing that you were able to sort of grasp it. And I feel lucky that I was too. So I hope others maybe listen to that and understand there's ways around that sort of obsessive thinking.
Yeah. And it's still an ongoing thing. I think that's another thing. It's like, I used to be very obsessed with getting to a destination, like getting to a place where then I wouldn't have to like maintain things anymore. Like things would just be. And mm-hmm. I think once I accepted that that's not real life, like real life is about creating good habits and constantly evolving, constantly improving on things. So I think that helped me too, because then I just kind of fell in love with the process of things as opposed to always so obsessed with getting to some destination. You know, I think that really helps mentally too.
Yeah, it's the journey more than anything. It's like I had an audition this week for something, and in the old days, I may have just sat there and thought about it the whole time. And instead I said to myself, oh, I'm just going to do this because I know I could do well. And it happened and I did my best and I think I did really well. And then you move on. It's in baseball, I feel like in sports, it's a similar thing, which is like, you know what your job is. You'll try your hardest. You know, you're going to still have those human moments of doubt and human moments of obsession, but they're different than the ones you can't control.
Yeah. I think that helped me when I moved to the bullpen. You know, when I was a starting pitcher my whole life, if I was pitching good, I would ride that high for the whole week and I'd have no problem with anxiety for the next game. But I think if I pitched poorly, then I kind of obsessed over it for 4 or 5 days. And then by the time I got to the game, I'd kind of be mentally already spent, you know, emotionally spent. And in the bullpen, I'm able to kind of just tune out and not really lock in until the moment of truth. And then basically I just tell myself, like, you know, I'm going to do what I can here and see what happens. And that way it doesn't put as much pressure on everything. And I'm not in a constant state of angst. So I think that kind of helped too.
Well, speaking of angst, I talked to Justin Turner this week. I asked him, you're going to be the first AL player that I get to ask this question to. Do you think the break in play is helping the Astros or hurting the Astros? Do you think that we are giving them some time off and that's going to get people's minds off it? Or you think baseball fans don't forget anything?
I don't think people are going to forget it, but I think it's helping them, because that was the story of spring training up until the virus. That was all day, every day. It was already to the point where it was exhausting. And I think that once the season started, they were going to be in for a lot of hatred from fans around the country. So to me, I think this is helping them, especially when they come back. There's definitely not going to be any fans in the stands. So I think it helps them. I mean, some of them have kind of come out of the cave and been back on social media and doing all their stuff. And, you know, good for them. Power to them. They're learning how to have that thick skin, I guess. But I think it helps them. I mean, it was definitely coming down on them pretty hard before this.
Well, I love that answer. I want to ask you something a little positive and something stupid. I'll give you some suggestions for quarantine. But first, is there anything that you think we've taken on during this time of the pandemic that you hope we keep when everything clears up? Something we want in society moving forward?
I don't know. I'm just not so aware of what everybody else is doing all the time. So I think I'm sure some good lessons will come out of this for the positive, but can't pinpoint anything at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I've been vocal about we shouldn't be hugging people anyway. I think hugging is super weird, unless you're family, I guess. But in baseball, we've been reading some of those new rules that they're looking at, you know, with the maybe not even high-fiving and obviously no spitting on the field and those things. Like, was there anything in that list that you were like, yeah, why do we do that?
No. I understand all of it because, like, that's part of the camaraderie, you know, the high-fiving and the sitting next to each other. And you are like a family and just mixing it up. And that's one of the beautiful things about baseball. There's the brotherhood there. And I don't know. It's definitely weird to not do any of that stuff. You know, I mean, if we shower with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's a different thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be very weird. Okay, so here are some suggestions for quarantine. You clearly have a mound with AstroTurf. You don't need my help. But here are some things that I wanted to throw out there for you and the listeners, things that maybe you could take up during the pandemic.
Okay.
All right, first, there is a new trend on the internet called pancake cereal. Have you heard about it?
No.
Okay, social media hit, bit of a meme. It's in the food world, and it's not for anyone on a diet, so I don't want Aaron Boone getting mad at you, but it's pancake cereal, which is literally what it sounds like. People make mini pancakes, very small pancakes, to all look like each other. Then they put them in a large bowl, making it look like cereal pieces. So, like, it looks like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but it's all small little pancakes.
Yep.
Okay. They add on top chocolate syrup, bananas, whipped cream, even milk in some cases. You could put blueberries on it. Lunch, midnight snack, doesn't matter. We're adults. All bets are off in the quarantine.
Wow.
Yeah. Not healthy.
I would try it because for me, the tough part is keeping my weight on during the quarantine.
Oh, all right. Well, that's a very lucky thing. I have put on enough weight for you.
In the season, we're used to getting like 4 or 5 meals a day at the field. So
yeah. Okay. Throw pancake cereal in the mix.
All right. What else we got?
Secondly, have you heard of something that's popped up during quarantine called a bear hunt?
No.
Okay. It's popping up in cities, United States, Iceland, Netherlands, Australia, New Zealand. It's inspired by a 1989 children's book called We're Going on a Bear Hunt. It's by Michael Rosen. And this could help with the children. This is an idea. Participants are placing teddy bears in their windows for children in the neighborhood to spot from, you know, walking in a, you know, distance walks or in the street and looking into windows like they're in a safari and basically picking off all the bears in the windows.
Okay.
Cute.
I could see that, but it depends on how close to the window I'd have to get. I would hope for it to be pretty distant because I wouldn't want to have my kids be creepy, like right up looking in people's houses.
That's true. My kid is either looking for a bear or become a very early peeping Tom.
Right, exactly.
Can't tell. All right, lastly, I know you are a big photography guy. You're very into cameras, right?
Yep.
Okay. Have you been able to shoot anything during quarantine?
Not really. I've shot some stuff, you know, related to baseball, and I've flown my drone around a little bit and really haven't gotten anything. And I did see a couple shots while I was driving to go to the grocery store one day that I wanted to take, but I didn't have my camera with me. So
Okay. Now
I'm sticking my camera in the car and hoping to do a little better in that way.
Well, I have an idea. There's no better time to shoot socially distant portraits, and I know the first person you can shoot.
Okay, I'm ready.
Your former teammate, the just retired CC Sabathia. We have seen incredible drastic weight loss over the past few months. This dude needs professional shots. He needs to show off the glow up.
Yeah, he does. He's looking good.
You could get him shirtless, tank top, whatever you're comfortable with. But here's the thing. Anytime anyone's going to talk about CeCe, they're going to show these old heavy shots, and he needs the fit stuff.
Yeah, he does. He said he was going to get ripped after baseball. We all didn't know if he was serious or not, but it seems like he's going for it.
I do love the idea he decided to get in shape after sports.
Great.
It's a great guy. Adam, you rule. Stay healthy and stay safe with your family. And I can't wait to watch you out on the real field, on the real mound, soon enough.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
The No Sports Report is produced and distributed by Treefort Media. The show is executive produced by Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, Matthew Kugler, and me, Jensen Karp. Tom Monahan is our senior audio engineer and sound supervisor, with production and editing by Jasper Leek. Additional production help from Tim Schauer, June Rosen, and Haley Mandelberg. Our theme music is composed by Spilkus. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please visit feedingamerica.org. If you're able to make a donation, any amount makes a difference, and you can learn more about other ways you can help on their website. For more information on the No Sports Report, links to the socials, and for show transcripts for our hearing impaired listeners, go to treefort.fm. Be safe and be well. The No Sports Report is a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.